All right, thanks very much, John. Well, the excitement is certainly growing here on The Late Debate. I know, John, you're a T-shirt watcher of this programme, so it's Joy Division Unknown Pleasures, and those pleasures will be known shortly as we go to the result of the exit poll. Thanks very much for the tunes. Welcome to the Late Debate exit poll special. Ballots have just closed across the country. Now, before I get to my guests in studio, we want to get first to the results of the exit poll. This poll was carried out today by Ipsos MRBI, who interviewed voters as they were leaving polling stations across the country. On behalf of Ipsos BNA, should I say, who interviewed voters as they were leaving the polling stations across the country, on behalf of RTE, the Irish Times, TG Cahir and Trinity College Dublin. The in-person interviews were conducted at 253 locations across every constituency in the country, and there were 5,018 people questioned. There's a margin of error of 1.4% in this poll. Now, the question asked of voters was, please complete this ballot paper exactly as you did when voting, indicating your first preference. We can bring you the results of that in this order. Fianna Fáil, 19.5%. Sinn Féin, 21.1%. Fine Gael, 21%. The Green Party, 4%. Labour, 5%. Social Democrats, 5.8%. People Before Profit Solidarity, 3.1%. ANPU, 3.6%. Independent Ireland, 2.2%. Other Independents, 12.7%. And Others, 1.9%. And so to my guests in studio, I'm joined now by political scientists from University College Cork, Dr. Teresa Reedy, and by public affairs consultant and former Fianna Fáil government advisor, Derek Mooney. Shortly, I'll be joined by political correspondent with the Irish Times, Jennifer Bray. Teresa, first, your reaction to those headline figures that we've got, those first preferences, as indicated, to the interviewers conducting this exit poll.
Well, I think the figures confirm a pattern that had been emerging, not really just in the last couple of weeks, but over the last couple of, maybe 2 years. And that's where the party system has now formed into maybe four or five main clusters, really. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Sinn Féin are equal in size, and there's maybe a point or two between them here. This is the exit poll. We'd expect some variation to the final result, but broadly speaking, the parties are of equal size. And then we have a fourth cluster, which makes up several of the kind of smaller parties of the left, and then a kind of a fifth cluster, which is based on this, maybe not as big as what we were expecting in relation to the independents, coming in around 15%. And I think the other thing to say about them is we sometimes talk about them as though they're a bloc, but in effect, they're actually a party system in and of themselves. And so we have a very fragmented a political system, a very fragmented political picture here in front of us, but it's broadly in line with what we've been seeing for the duration of the campaign and for the last year and a half to 2 years.
Okay, Derek, just to look at it by comparison to the results of the last general election, if Fianna Fáil are indeed, and we should say the margin of error is 1.4%, but if Fianna Fáil are on 19.5%, that's down 2.5% on their election results the last time. If Sinn Féin are on 21.1%, that's down 3% on their last election result. Fine Gael remain broadly the same if they're on 21%. That's the big parties. As a headline, I suppose, on this, the Social Democrats, if they are 5.8% on that, they were 2.9% the last time. That's a doubling of their vote share, but how that breaks down is obviously that's obviously something to be taken into consideration as well. But what's your reaction there to that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think the indication of the last week or so, it looked like the election was slipping away from Fine Gael. So kind of it would be, I think Fine Gael people would be very, very happy if they do come in at 21%, which is the same result, as you say, they got in 2020. And it's Fianna Fáil, I would be surprised if it does finish up at 19.5, but let's assuming it does. That's just outside the margin of error. That would be disappointing for Fianna Fáil. I think they certainly were expecting to come in at 22, 23%. They were hoping. Don't forget, there's 14 extra seats in the Dáil. So therefore, for 14 extra seats, if you got the same vote, you'd hoping to pick up 3 seats. And this one, it looks like Fianna Fáil could be looking to lose 1 or 2 seats.
I just want to draw, we do have somebody on the line there, Aintu at 3.6%. Yeah. I just want to get a quick reaction now from Padraig Tobin, currently the party's sole outgoing TD, but obviously had eyes on a gain of potentially 10 seats around the country. Padraig Tobin on 3.6%, doing a back of an envelope calculation on this. What do you think that might translate to into seats? Obviously, it'll depend on where that's concentrated.
Yeah, we're very happy with that for sure. We'll take that easy. That's nearly a doubling of the vote that we've achieved in the last election. And, you know, given that in the last election, there were, Pavan Monahan, we weren't too far off a seat at that stage. I would say that and this level of support should bring us a number of seats across the line. And, we were definitely competitive in 10 constituencies. I said at the start that we wouldn't obviously win all of those, but that some of those on a good day would fall our way. And that's this level of support. Yeah, I think that there's a good chance of me having company going back into the Dáil on the next Dáil, which would be great.
All right, it must be, I suppose, quite tantalising on one level to have further detail on this, all of which will become clear when boxes start to open tomorrow, or indeed when tomorrow morning on RT Radio 1 there's more of this exit poll gone through, and perhaps you'll get a greater geographic breakdown. Yeah, and any best guess at this stage where, apart from yourself, you think this is?
Yeah, I think the difficulty for us has always been, obviously, because we're new, we're growing throughout the country. We don't necessarily have any kind of household names in other locations. But I think Cavan, Monaghan, Mayo, Wexford and Dublin West are the areas I think where we're strongest in. In Dublin West, for example, we were, I think, fourth place in the local elections in terms of support. And we won two council seats there. And that's a 5-seater now, so there's a chance there. And obviously in Mayo as well, we have a very strong candidate there, Paul Lawless, who I think is in with a shout. Wexford's a little bit tighter because of it's a 4-seater, but Jim Codd's got 24% of the vote in the Rosslare LEA in the last local election. So I do think there's a number of areas now where the concentration levels have built up sufficiently that a doubling in vote could actually get people across the line.
Can I ask you just one more question before we let you go? The issue on which you got the greatest engagement, you were vocal on a number of issues. There was obviously a gaining in profile over the course of the referendum campaign. But a sizable plank of your campaign was this issue around government waste. Is that the one you got the greatest engagement on the doorsteps? Or was there another salient issue in particular that you saw yourself getting strong feedback on?
Yeah, it's the issue that we focused on the most. And actually, most from the very start, we recognised that there was deep anger in society in the level of waste that's happening for two reasons. One, obviously, because, you know, money is hard got. And if the government are wasting it, that creates anger in people. But two, the flip side of the waste is that infrastructural projects that are so necessary for our lives are grinding to a halt as well. And, you know, in terms of transport and health and education, people are feeling the pain from that lack of infrastructure. So, yeah, it's an issue that we really focus on, and we've no doubt that we receive traction on it for sure.
It could be margin of error. It could be 2.2%. It could, of course, also be 5%. But all will
be
revealed.
It could be a little bit higher either. Yeah,
all will be revealed over the course of tomorrow. I don't know how much sleep you'll get in anticipation of that, but no doubt.
Thanks very much. We look forward to it.
Well, stay tuned. We'll get to the second preferences later in the programme. I'll go back to my Padraig Tobin, Aintu leader and outgoing TD in Meath West. Thanks for joining us on the programme. Teresa Reedy, you know, 3.6%. The person we were just talking to on the phone there, Padraig Tobin, did a lot of heavy lifting. There was a lot of discussion about the presidential style of campaigns, how much leaders effectively cut through. But for a small party, Padraig Tobin did a pretty good job in this campaign.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things going into the campaign, we'd spent a lot of time talking about maybe the small left parties and to see whether one of those might make a kind of a breakthrough and lead the pack, somewhat akin to what the Green Party did in 2020. But actually, looking at this data, in many respects, actually, Aintu is the party that's kind of significantly move the dial. Now, it's still low, but on 3%, 3.5%, you know, they're going to be in contention in a number of constituencies. I'd have to speak specifically, though, to Pádraig Tobin. Yeah. He is a very impressive communicator. And in that 10-way leaders debate, in many respects, he actually was the person who came out of the smaller political parties by some distance the strongest. He was nicely positioned on the stage. He had some very good lines. Some of them were quite memorable. And, you know, he had, as you kind of mentioned there earlier, he had a couple of key issues and he's been kind of pushing those all along. So I think they're in contention, places that Pádraig has mentioned, Sarah O'Reilly and Kevin Monaghan, Emer Tobin in Meath East, maybe Michael O'Dowd in Louth.
He mentioned Paul Lawless in Mayo.
Possibly, you know, I mean, they're not going to get all of those, but some of them are certainly in contention, and there will be other independent candidates in the fray that will potentially transfer to.
Yeah, I think the figure that strikes out there to me is the Independent Ireland figure. If that's 2.2%, that certainly will be way below what they were expecting, and they were certainly looking at 4 seats, maybe 8 seats on a good day. I don't think they're going to come anywhere near that. But those eliminations and those transfers could be absolutely pivotal, in particular for a party for somebody like Pádraig.
And what they would have looked for, I mean, if you look at the results of election 2020, the cumulative vote would have been for independence, I think it was somewhere in the region of, is it 15% or so, that if you put it down here,
it's roughly the same.
So there was no real gain, Derek, of this kind of independent plus brand that Independent Ireland was pushing, if this is to be believed, obviously margin of error, etc.
No, absolutely. And again, I think the margin of error has been repeated consistently. But if you look at the three main parties, they're within a percentage of 2 points. OK, with the exception of Sinn Féin, which is actually 3 points down. But they were within 1 or 2 points of where they were in 2020. So it looks like we've had an election where there was very little movement. And what movement was for the smaller parties, particularly Social Democrats and Aintu, are the big beneficiaries of it. And that looking at all the movements of the polls we've seen over the last few weeks, etc., that means the voters haven't moved that far. They haven't moved in any dramatic direction. Well, at a time when you're seeing incumbent governments dropping left, right and centre across the globe, you're looking here as a very small movement of things. So maybe turnout is the big factor on this one. Maybe that's the point, which is people who were looking for big choice just didn't come out.
And incumbent governments, Teresa Reedy, if you're looking at, say, the situation in Germany, cost of living was a massive issue. Foreign policy was a massive issue there. In the US, the macro indicators were very good. But again, it was what they call the pocketbook issues there. They were all prevalent here also. And yet, was there enough done in the one-off measures in the lead up to this and, you know, results yet to be seen? Was there enough in the one-off measures to maybe stave off the worst excesses of discontent on that front from the point of view of the incumbents?
Yeah, I think that's the critical difference that you have between, say, Ireland or our near neighbours. If you just look at what happened in the United Kingdom, even the budgets were within a couple of months of each other. The context was just immensely different. They were cutting back. There's a huge discussion in Germany about the debt break and, you know, that there needs to be more austerity. There's huge problems with their infrastructure. But the conversation is just, it's on a completely different plane here in Ireland. The public finances are in rude good health and the government actually turned, you know, those resources on very significantly. And we were all a little bit sniffy when the budget discussions were happening here, you know, only a couple of weeks ago, saying, you know, will people be bought off with their own money? But that might have been kind of entirely the wrong way to come against it. People were feeling very significant pressures on their finances, and some of the schemes that were introduced by the government actually did do something to perhaps alleviate some of the worst excesses. I wouldn't overdo it, though. There are still quite a few votes here, you know, not for parties of the opposition and for parties that are very strongly critical of the current economic model and the current distribution. But by and large, the government has, it would appear, being able to hold on to quite a bit of the support that it garnered in 2020.
Okay. I suppose we'll come back and have a look in a bit more detail at some of the party numbers, specifically maybe if you want to, during these, we're going to play a couple of Vox Pops, but if you want to have a look at some of the smaller party gains and maybe assess whether or not Sinn Féin in particular sees those percentage rises as votes that maybe got away on it this time round in a way that, you know, went to the other parties last time round because they didn't run sufficient candidates. We might have a look at that after this. But first, we want to go and hear what people actually said on the street. Some of the voices. We're going to go first to Cork, and our reporter Brian O'Connell was on Gardiner's Hill in Cork North Central in that constituency speaking to voters as they exited the polling stations. He talked to them about what motivated their vote.
Did you vote differently to last time out?
Not very much differently, no. Generally kind of left-wing and independent voters.
What were the issues for you?
Oh, well, I mean, environmentalism is top of the list.
What did you think of the campaign?
To be honest, it was a bit lackluster from my perspective. I didn't really see very much of it.
I voted same parties again, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael.
You're happy enough with how things are going, so?
Yeah, happy enough, yeah.
It's actually my first time voting in Cork. I'm about the same.
So for you, it was the people over the last couple of years that you reach out to that helped you out. They're the ones that
yeah,
you went in to
my,
vote, yeah.
My number one vote went to the TD, who actually answered an email when I sent it.
What were the issues for you?
Schools, kids. It's all to do with kids. We have three small kids, and it was all down to what's going to make things easier for them in school.
And you felt the government was doing an okay job on that front?
I think we did, in that we got a brand new school up there, and that's the existing government that's there. That was the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that got that. But for me, it was very much... vote down here very much came down to who answered an email when I sent it and asked a question.
And you know, I suppose the other thing was that we got Brian Dillon's GA Club above, like we got the Grand Clare recent enough for the AstroTurf pitch,
the sports capital grant,
which
yeah.
was huge for us, so here and huge this area, so that helped as well. They bought our votes in one sense, they did, but it worked.
Did you change your vote from last time? Was it a different vote this time?
No, it was the same. I voted for change.
Was there anything during the campaign that made you change any of your preferences?
No, because housing and health was big on the list, to be honest.
Can I ask, did you vote differently to how you voted last time out?
A little bit, yeah. I usually give or kind of go down the list and spread out the vote, but I just gave three votes and I stopped at that, so I didn't give any to the main parties, but I usually would have.
Can I surmise you voted for change then? You voted for a different government?
Yeah, independence. People who are kind of strong on the immigration issue, so.
And by virtue of the fact that immigration was an issue for you, that you leaned more towards the independence?
Yeah.
I voted more for the incumbent, more so this time than before.
Why was that?
Because I don't buy into the hysteria of how bad things are. Things are, we have our issues and stuff like that, but I don't believe in tearing everything up.
Can I ask, did you vote differently to last time?
Yes.
Why was that?
Because my son knows the person that I voted for.
So it was a personal connection?
Well, I don't know him at all, but my son knows him, so I went for him. I don't know any of the candidates, to be honest. Mm-hmm. He was the only one I knew.
Did you continue your preferences down the line?
I did.
What guided you with them?
Well, I went for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael because my husband's absolutely terrible. And my home family would have been Fianna Fáil. Because
so your parents might have voted Fianna Fáil?
Always, yeah. So
yours was very much a personal vote on one level, and then that family vote, the historical vote that was within the family, which still carries on the generations. Yeah.
All right, voices there from Teresa, the real capital. Brian O'Connell speaking to voters in Cork North Central. We're going to go to Dublin now because A.B. Philbin Bowman spoke to constituents in Dublin Central as they cast their votes. He started by asking voters what issues had influenced their votes.
When my age now, when I first started out working, it was a very low-paying job. I could afford to live in the centre of Dublin with friends. That is never going to happen for kids nowadays. I know my kids, they'll never be able to afford a house in this country. Just many other things, the hospitals, the bike sheds, things like that.
They need to start closing borders because there's no housing. We can't house them and other people are losing their houses, do you know what I mean?
And yourself, madam, what's the issue?
I was saying it yourself. You can't house your own, so why are you bringing all these immigration people in? I know, like...
I'm not raising anything like that, but it's time to close the borders.
We look at the Americans' voting system and they've allowed someone to be their president, which has no political sort of like strategy. And now you look at Ireland and there's one particular person who makes a mockery of it all, you know what I mean? But again, that's democracy, supposedly, you know?
Crime, I work in town. I live around, we get robbed every day.
I think
most of them are the same, you know. But I prefer Marilu, you know.
Childcare.
Childcare. And is there anyone who's particularly impressed or unimpressed you on that score?
Social Democrats have impressed me.
Housing. I mean, we're late 20s. It's going to be on our minds quite soon.
And how about yourself?
I'd be the exact same. I mean, we're stuck in such a strange situation as like working professionals in our late 20s. And I know people a lot older than us that also can't afford things. You have people in their 40s that are living in group housing. And that's just obscene in this country that's supposedly wealthy.
Immigration. Not emigration. My daughter had to move away. There's too many coming into the country, open borders.
Yeah, the far right people who are... That's one of the main reasons why I came in here, to stop them getting in. They're just out there inciting hatred, and the stuff that happened last year, I think, is it's just really upsetting, and I think that Ireland doesn't have any place for that. We've been welcomed all over the world, and I think that that's kind of, we need to give that back to people.
Housing is probably the biggest issue. Not for me, luckily, because I have a home, but for most people it's housing. So I vote for most people.
Yes, the economy and Trump, and I'm scared of what he's going to do for us.
Housing. I think Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have sort of, they haven't really done a lot. And the houses that they have built have been, you know, really, really overpriced.
Antisocial behaviour.
And what kind of antisocial behaviour have you experienced?
Crack cocaine. The guard don't do anything. You go to Dublin City Council and they don't answer you. We are not safe.
Is there an issue that's going to decide your vote today?
I don't know.
Walking in the polling station, you haven't decided?
Not really, no.
There you go. The undecided. It's right up to the last minute. I think 31% of people, according to the Ireland Thinks Sunday Independent poll in a week leading up to the election, said they didn't know what way they were going to go with that person. Now, pushing it to the wire, that was Aby Philbin-Bowman speaking to voters in Dublin Central this afternoon. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with second preferences after this.
Email latedebate@rte.ie.
You're welcome back. Grab a pen. More numbers in this half. If you're just joining us, this is a late debate special on the exit poll carried out today by Ipsos BNA, who interviewed voters as they were leaving polling stations across the country on behalf of RTE, the Irish Times, TG Cahir and Trinity College Dublin. So we ran you through the first preferences in the first half of the programme. I'll just give you a quick scoot through them again because we are going to get to second preferences now. There was 5,018 people interviewed. The margin of error is 1.4 in this. Fianna Fáil, 19.5% of people said they were getting their first preference vote. Sinn Féin, 21.1%. Fine Gael, 21%. Green Party, 4%. Labour, 5%. Social Democrats, 5.8%. People for Profit Solidarity, 3.1%. AIM2, 3.6%. Independent Ireland, 2.2%. Independence, non-party, 12.7%. And others, 1.9%. So they were the first preferences. Let's run you now through who people said they had given their second preference to. Fianna Fáil, 20%. Sinn Féin, 17%. Fine Gael, 20%. Green Party, 3%. Labour, 6%. Social Democrats, 5%. People Before Profit Solidarity, 4%. AIM2, 3%. Independent Ireland, 3%. Independence Non-Party, 14%. And others, 2%. We're also joined now by Jennifer Bray, political correspondent with the Irish Times, who is also with us, along with Teresa Reedy, political scientist from University College Cork, and Derek Mooney, public affairs consultant and former Fianna Fáil government advisors. Pull it all together for us there, Jennifer. What do you make?
No problem. Whisk you up a coalition.
Yeah, I know. What do you make, though, of, I mean, it was kind of, as you were, marginal falls on the last election for some in those, amongst the largest parties, Fine Gael remaining the same. What can you read from the second preferences there? What jumps out at you?
You know what jumps out at me? Sinn Féin, 17% second preference. I've covered a few elections, and in most of the general elections I've covered, I've noticed that Sinn Féin generally aren't that transfer friendly. To me, now I don't have the exact figure to hand for the last time, but to me that's actually not a bad figure for Sinn Féin.
Yeah, I think it's a jump of about, well, the exit poll, I'm comparing the exit poll last time.
Yeah.
They were at 11.2% in 2020 in the exit poll. This is a jump of nearly 6%.
This
alleged transfer toxicity is maybe dissipating.
I think that's really interesting for Sinn Féin, isn't it? I mean, they've been trying obviously to move towards a position where they will be viewed as a government in waiting. Now, look, just to briefly go back to the first preference ones, if you look, the clearest path to a coalition is clearly at the moment, I think, between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and perhaps the Labour Party or another smaller party. I think Sinn Féin will be happy enough with their first preference vote because they've had a very difficult year. they would have hoped for much better. In a way, it is kind of the opposition losing in a certain sense. But on the second preferences, Sinn Féin jumped out as being less transfer toxic. The Green Party, 3%. That's very low. And I think that speaks to kind of their lack of popularity, particularly, I think, in rural areas. And then, of course, look, there are smaller numbers for the Social Democrats. People Before Profit, you will expect parties of the left to transfer to parties of the left. But they're the things that jumped out to me. And of course, you've got Fianna Fáil 20%, Fine Gael 20%. That's broadly in line with what I would have expected.
All right. You mentioned, let's have a look at the smaller parties, Teresa, because, you know, if we are to get into coalitionology, the Social Democrats, if they are a party people are eyeing up for coalition, they've doubled their first preference vote here. They're doing okay at 5% amongst people in second preferences. But is that amongst second preference a slight disappointment for a party that has doubled its first preference?
I mean, I think that that possibly is the case. I think the Social Democrats probably coming in at the lower bound of where they were in some of the recent polls. And there's a good deal of consistency between their first and second preferences. I mean, what it's going to come down to effectively tomorrow is which of these three parties of the soft centre-left are actually ahead in most of the counts. So you have got a lot of bunching. And so we talked about the kind of top tier, which are the medium-sized parties being bunched together. But actually, the Green Party are on three, if I go to the first preferences, the Green Party are on four, Labour are on five, and the Social Democrats are on 5.8. That's the margin of error between them. And then when we look over to the second preferences, the Social Democrats are on five, the Labour Party on six. They're marginally more transfer-friendly, and the Green Party a little bit less transfer.
Well, that's what I was going to ask,
so
Derek.
For
the Greens, they have seen a drop of three on the general election 2024 result. If they're only 3% in the second preferences, they really are relying on some of their stronger, high-profile candidates. They need to keep them ahead in the race because transfers really aren't going to do them much.
That's exactly
favors.
The point. And it's like when the tide goes out, the tide goes out. And for the Greens, the tides have gone out. So if you're not getting if you're not getting the first preference, you're not getting it anywhere else. And that can often be the case. And people rarely vote the opposite direction of their second preference. If they're going in one direction on their first preference, their second preference is going to follow the same thing. Now, I just wonder, to some degree, are people, does this include second candidates from the same party, and they've got more second candidates from Sinn Féin?
That's what I would specifically say in relation to Sinn Féin. There were actually very few constituencies in 2020 where Sinn Féin ran second candidates, whereas there's in fact second candidates and third candidates quite a few constituencies. Yeah. So that higher level of transfers is intra-party.
And the party actually added a lot of third candidates to the ticket
Kathy Bennett.
And I think that you know, looking at those figures, they'll be happy enough with that. I think now I stand by the point that I think.
Oh no, I think you're right.
Time last year, what would have been expected of Sinn Féin, what they would have hoped for, it wouldn't have been this. Yeah. But given what they have endured, I suppose is the wrong word to use, but like they've had a torrid October and a difficult year on a number of different fronts, they'd be happy enough, especially with the transfers. Also interesting to look at AIM too. I think first preference, 3.6%, Pádraig Tobin will be very happy with that. And I think that sort of mirrors the reaction to some of his performances in the leaders' debate. I think people took well to that. And on second preferences, also three. So AIM2 are running 43 candidates, one in every constituency. You'd have to think they're clearly in line to make some gains here. Nothing crazy substantial, but enough to make Pádraig Tobin being quite happy tonight, I'd say.
Well, we want to go to because James Brown, Fianna Fáil candidate in Wexford, is on the line. James Brown, good evening. Thanks for making the time to join us.
Good evening.
You got 38 seats on 22% last time out in the election results. So this 19.5% in the exit poll with a margin of error of 1.4%. What's your best guess on a rough calculation on these numbers? I don't know whether you've heard the conversation so far, but you've seen the 19.5% first preferences and pretty transfer friendly on 20% there. You'd be hopeful of some gains, would you? Or are you concerned that the first preference maybe isn't where the general election result was last time?
Well, all three parties are within the margin of error, and I think there's going to be an awful lot of seats right across the country are going to go down to the wire. transfers are going to be absolutely critical to make the difference in those seats. And we have to see where that vote is bunched for the different parties as well. So I think, look, we have to wait until tomorrow to see what the votes are like right across in the individual constituencies. But as I say, the three parties, it's within the margin of error. And I think there's going to be an awful lot to be decided over the next 3 days.
Right. As you say, within the margin of error, I mean, there's a slight decline in your second preference vote by comparison to where you were in 2020. You were at 21.7 then. You're on 20 in this one. It is marginal and in and around the margin of error there. What do you read from that?
Well, again, all within the margin of error. So this is going to be exceptionally tight. I think similar to what it was 4.5 years ago, when there was only a couple of seats between each of the three largest parties. Fianna Fáil in 2020, the exit poll, I think, was spot on, but it overestimated Fine Gael and underestimated Sinn Féin. When you go back to 2016, however, Fianna Fáil's vote was significantly underestimated. So the margin of error can have a serious impact, obviously, versus what the actual outturn is.
All right. If you are to make gains, you want to be making a comeback in a number of key constituencies in Dublin. If you don't make your gains there, they have to be outside of Dublin and at the expense of Fine Gael. But what's your assessment based on these numbers of the likelihood of any serious gains in Dublin?
Well, again, aside from the margin of error, obviously we don't have a breakdown as to where this vote is coming from, whether there's a significant variation from Dublin over the previous elections, or whether it's static, or whether it's improved or disimproved. So it is really, really difficult to extrapolate on a constituency by constituency basis based on an exit poll with the margin of error within it. And when you have parties so close, you're going to see an awful lot of elections and awful in various constituencies going right down to the last count. And, you know, there's so many candidates as well within each constituency. In my own constituency, there's 15 candidates, an awful lot of which will actually get a decent vote, and we'll be waiting a long time to see where those various transfers, and it'll be, in many constituencies, it'll be whoever just gets their nose ahead will be able to stay ahead, and they will get that seat. So I think there'll be an awful lot of worried and long nights for an awful lot of candidates right across the country from the various parties.
So too early to say you're happy enough at this stage, is it?
Yeah, I think it very much is too early to say, and that's a legitimate, I think, statement based on the fact that when you have the three largest parties all within the margin of error, and very difficult then with the smaller parties, when you have that margin of error, to see how that's going to work out. For example, the Greens are on 4%. If that's, again, focused on individual constituencies, they'll be happy with that. If that's a broad-based vote across the country, they could be in serious trouble. So it's very difficult to extrapolate.
On the second preferences, do you think ruling out going into coalition with Sinn Féin helped or hindered? Do you think your 20% of second preferences would have been higher or lower had you had a different position on that?
Again, it's very hypothetical in any of these types of situations, but I think it was the correct thing to do to rule out Sinn Féin. I don't think it will have had a major impact on transfers either way. You have to remember, and my experience is that for every person who might favour Sinn Féin, there's somebody else who will be completely and adamantly opposed to any involvement of Sinn Féin in government. So I think that's a double-edged sword, no matter what way you do it.
James Brown, thanks very much for joining us. James Brown there, Fianna Fáil candidate in Wexford. Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin finance spokesperson, of course, candidate in Donegal, is on the line. Piers, thanks for making the time to join us.
No problem. Thank you.
35 TDs going into this election. You got 37 TDs last time on 24.5% of the vote. The exit poll, notwithstanding the margin of error, has you 3 points down on that result. So what's your best guess at this stage on a calculation of TDs at this point on that result?
Oh, look, it's far too early to be guessing like that there. If you look at the exit poll and it's been reflected in James's contribution and others, your own pundits in RTE, that the exit poll actually last time, the last election, actually underestimated our support. So it's about a, there's only a difference of a point, a percentage point between this exit poll and the one 4.5 years ago in terms of Sinn Féin's vote. And not only did we take 37 seats, but actually I think it's well accepted that we left quite a number of seats behind us because we didn't run enough candidates. We are running more candidates now. Let's see what the actual real result is. We felt momentum growing behind Sinn Féin over the last probably week in particular.
On what, as a matter of interest, you know, where was the traction on the doors when you say you felt momentum? Was there any particular issue on which you felt that?
You could just feel that people, you know, coming to that kind of decision, they want to change. We offered a very positive platform in terms of hope and in terms of change. And look, this exit poll is just an exit poll, but it has us topping the poll. Any day that you're topping the poll is a good day in politics, let me tell you that. But we'll actually have to wait to see what how that plays out. But obviously, you know, when you look deeper in the exit poll as well, the second preference votes are quite very strong for Sinn Féin.
Would you be encouraged by, I mean, like the first preference votes in the exit poll in 2020, you were on 22.3%. Ultimately, your result in terms of percentage of votes was 24%. So it was about 2% off. But the second preferences is well outside the margin of error. I think you were on 11% in the exit poll the last time on second preferences. You're on 17 there. So would that make you hopeful, particularly in the bigger constituencies, the 4 and 5 seaters?
Yeah, it would look, and you know, like time will tell in this year, but like a number of things happened, if you recall, in the last election. A lot of our candidates actually topped the poll and didn't rely on transfers, so we didn't really get a chance to see how the transfers would play out. That's not going to be the case now because we're running multiple candidates. We're running 71 candidates across the state, so we're running in, you know, 2 candidates and 3 candidates in most constituencies. Transfers will come into this, and the transfer patterns are a lot healthier. Here, even though there was a strong view of you know, vote left, transfer left 4 years ago, it's clear that there is a solidification against Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in relation to the left, and it appears that Sinn Féin are picking up in a substantial amount those transfers. So while some of those parties are polling really well, and that's good to see, and they will take seats, but in many of the constituencies they won't be strong enough to take the seats, so transfers will come into play in relation to that. So it's going to be a long day tomorrow, and indeed it might go in even beyond that in terms of the final seats, and that's where really this will be determined. But tonight, when you know, you take an exit poll, you take it that you've topped the poll in a general election for the second time in a row, and that's a positive stance for ourselves, particularly after what was a bruising local and European elections. I think we've responded back, we've listened to our community, we've responded back with a very positive programme about fixing the housing crisis, about making sure that ordinary workers and families...
Can I ask you just one more question, you know, on the numbers there? You lost 3, the Social Democrats gained around 3. I mean, do you see those votes perhaps as a lost opportunity that, you know, you weren't able to stay ahead to mop up those votes that you maybe lost to other parties the last time when you weren't running enough candidates?
You're talking about this exit poll, are you?
Yes, this exit poll.
Yeah, look, and I just say this, and genuinely, with respect, we haven't lost anything yet. You know, if we were talking 4.5 years ago, Fine Gael topped the poll, we came second, and, you know, Fianna Fáil came third. That isn't what happened then in the election. We were about nearly 4 points ahead of Fine Gael when the votes were counted. So we haven't lost anything. This is an exit poll. It's a good indication at this point in time that we're topping the poll. You may find that tomorrow we may be even further ahead, but we just need to wait and see. But what I do take away from this year is 2 things. One is that we have, according to this exit poll, we have actually topped the poll. The second thing is we have a healthy pathway of transfers from other parties off the left, and that's really something that in a multi-seat constituency, right, where we're fielding enough candidates in this campaign, that actually gives me hope and succour.
Happy enough then overall. Pierce Doherty, Sinn Féin candidate in Donegal and party finance spokesperson, thanks for joining us. We're going to go to Ciarán Cannon now, not contesting this election for Fine Gael, but no doubt active out on the canvas. So Ciarán, just to go return to the numbers there, last time out you got 35 seats on 21% of the vote. In this exit poll, You're around the same point, 21% all square. As an incumbent party, are you happy enough with that, or are you disappointed that this idea of a new energy reinvigoration with plenty of money behind the party going into the campaign maybe didn't give you as much of a bounce as you might have hoped?
Evening, Colm. At a personal level, I'm very happy with this. If you had told me 6 months ago we were set to lose 17 of our TDs, people like Leo Varadkar, Simon Coveney, and at the end of that process, in a situation where we had 26 constituencies in this particular election, and we have no sitting TD on the ballot paper in 26 constituencies, and if this turn proves to be accurate, ultimately tomorrow or over the next 48 hours, we stand to gain 4 seats. So I think any kind of objective analysis of how we've performed, assuming these figures turn out to be reflected in the actual votes counted, I think it's a solid performance.
Right. Let's call a spade. It wasn't an easy campaign for Fine Gael. There were unforced errors all over the place. There was a highly controversial incident involving the Taoiseach. There was your candidate in Louth, John McGahan. There was Michael O'Leary's speech at Peter Burke's campaign launch. I mean, if you were writing the script on that, that wouldn't have been the one you'd have written. Canturk, apologies.
Well, Colm, it's fascinating, and I've always made this case to people outside of the world of politics, outside of the political commentators, the people, all of us who move around in the sphere of Leinster House every week. These issues, as you describe them, they tended to be dwelled on significantly within the media, print media, broadcast media, but I've been out with a wonderful candidate.
Oh, well, no, steady on. They were published by the broadcast media, but they were subsequently viewed on social media around 3 million times.
I'm not saying for a moment they weren't disseminated widely. What I am saying to you is I don't think the supposed fallout from those actually proved to be realistic in terms of, you listen to that vox pop from those couple of people in Cork 10 minutes ago. One lady voting because she simply got a reply to an email, but she's also voting because there's a brand new school in her community. Another gentleman voting because the government was able to fund an AstroTurf facility. I have been travelling throughout the towns and villages of East Galway for the last month, and there is not one single town or village in this constituency which has not seen significant investment in some shape or form over the last 5 years.
All right.
And certainly over the last 10 years.
Positivity on the doorstep to the extent that you might have even reconsidered. I mean, you said things were getting quite toxic, heavy and negative, and you decided that politics was no longer for you. Did you have second thoughts? Such was the positivity in East Galway.
I perhaps did at times, but I was working with an extraordinary candidate in Niamh Madden, and I'm hoping that we'll see her elected over the weekend. But the thing is, Teresa Reedy made the point earlier on, and I think it needs to be reiterated. Public finances in rude good health. Money put aside to flatten out any future cyclical boom bust. You know, when people reflect, as they walk up the steps to the polling station, they do reflect in a very, I would argue, far more significant way than we might, ultimately give them credit for.
All right, Kieran Cannon, former Fine Gael TD for Galway East, and thanks for joining us on those numbers. Teresa Reedy, seeing as you're being quoted, we'll go to you first. You've heard from the candidates in the bigger parties. We've given quite a bit of time to them. I do want to look at independents, smaller parties, including Independent Ireland. What do you take from this? What do you take from these exit polls on them?
Before I go to them, could I just say something in general about the main thing?
Sorry,
the main three parties.
And before you do, I should say, as of 9 o'clock, turnout in this election was 50%. The total turnout last time was 62.9%. So that's where we are at the moment. It remains to be seen what the final turnout was. I think the average across Europe was 67%. So Ireland was below that. Sorry,
I think we'll all have a lot to say
say about that, if that turns out to be the case. But just picking up on the big parties there, I think there's two things we need to think about. One is there's a bigger doll. So actually, everybody is going to come back with more seats, more than likely, on these figures. Yeah. I would have thought so. You know, there are 14 extra seats. So actually, if you allocate those out proportionately, there's something there for everybody in terms of, you know,
everybody can sell a win.
Everybody can spin a win tomorrow. And, you know, there's no doubt about that. So I think that's the first thing to say. I think we also then need to look at the interaction of incumbency with some of these figures. And there, I would specifically say Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil have an advantage on these numbers that Fine Gael don't have. When a lot of people were going into the polling station today, they were seeing familiar names on the ballot in relation to Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin. But when they went in, Simon Harris wasn't on the ballot in the 43 constituencies. He was only in Wicklow, and there were quite new faces. And
all right. So is it before we leave this and get on to the smaller parties, Derek, Jennifer, is it then an even better result on one level for Fine Gael based on the fact that there were so few incumbents going in?
There's a factor of that, certainly. But quite frankly, if you look at the three main parties, it's kind of been an exercise in how you get a lead and you throw it away over a period of time. You've got 18 months ago, Sinn Féin was at 35%, was roughly where Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael combined was. Fine Gael got the Simon Harris bounce, which we're told was bringing them into the mid-20s. And Fianna Fáil then saw Fine Gael coming down and then said, oh, we can jump in there and we can have a really good... with the
political gravity is a cruel gravitas. Thing.
But there we go. But then if that number is correct for Fianna Fáil and it's 19.5%, and I do accept that that comes with a major caveat, it will be the second worst result for Fianna Fáil in its history. So the most Fianna Fáil is playing for now is the second or third worst result.
Spin that.
Yeah. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do. And luckily, I don't have to spin that anymore. There was a time I would have, and now I don't.
Glass half full and
so I can now take a relief from that.
There's the question I can ask every Fianna Fáil candidate tomorrow afternoon.
What's your spin?
Yeah.
It's national spin a win day.
One other thing to say on Sinn Féin, though, is transfer discipline is much stronger in Sinn Féin than it is in either of the other two political parties.
We do need to get to independence and small parties. Because, Jennifer, this, I suppose, there was at least a perception that there was a kind of a great independent insurgency. We factor in, obviously, the 1.4% margin of error, which may or may not be greater come the opening of the boxes. What do you make of their performance?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think Independent Ireland will be quite disappointed with 2.2 in their first preferences. I think they hoped for a lot more. I think they had kind of a difficult campaign. You know, there was an instance when they had a councillor, Philip Sutcliffe, who left the party. There was kind of, you know, stuff that cropped up along the way that I think they were uncomfortable with and that they weren't happy with in terms of headlines that were made from that. I think if you look then at other independents, 12.7% non-party other independents. Again, the story of the local elections, one of the stories, apart from, you know, the very bad day for Sinn Féin, was this rise in independence. And we did wonder, like, will we see this fully replicated in the general election? 12.7 is not a bad figure, right, for independence, but I don't think it's as high as even they would have hoped.
Slightly better in their second preferences, the independence and non-party, as opposed to Independent Ireland.
Yes,
but 14. Independents are doing they're on 14, their first preference is 12.7. So,
yeah,
that's not a bad outlook.
But in terms of how many seats can that deliver them and where down the line are those votes going to end up, either in a Sinn Féin pile, a Fine Gael pile or a Fianna Fáil pile? Because that's, if they're going anywhere, that's
especially
what
when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael transfer so heavily to each other. Yeah.
So I think that's going to be, and I think what Fianna Fáil would be disappointed in, I think they actually thought Fine Gael was coming in lower and there would be Fine Gael transfers available to them that would see them over the line in constituencies like Donegal or Clare, etc. Now, again, this is playing the pundit's game, the rest of us, until such time as we see the ballot boxes open tomorrow and then we can play with the tally figures and then we can look to the next set of figures. But if I were looking at those tonight, I would not be a happy Fianna Fáil.
If you were Ivana Bacic, Teresa Reedy, tonight, would you feel slightly vindicated by the approach you'd advocated before the election? Because the Green Party may be ringing Ivana Bacic rather than Ivana Bacic ringing the Green Party.
I mean, yes and no. I have to say I take a different view here. I really think if you are the centre-left parties and you want to have an impact on an election, you organise before the election, not after the election. It just is the blindingly obvious.
Well, you do
here.
If,
you're organising
you
for a government. Yeah, and actually, they're the party that had the biggest problem too in terms of managing a way into that would have been the Greens, because they were in government. And how do you form an alignment with parties that are not in government? But I think what was the missing ingredient in this election all along was that there wasn't a clear alternative government that was evident, and that was partially because the centre left, which is actually doing reasonably okay, is very fragmented.
Right.
And if they had organised in advance, I think they had the capacity to generate some momentum.
Which kind of brings us back to the independents, because Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael effectively at the end of the government tossed the Greens overboard and said to it was a signal to the regional independents, we want infrastructure interested independents to come on board. What's your local project? What's your price? Let's form the next coalition. Would you agree with that assessment, Derek?
Yeah, no, I think it is. And certainly for governments, it's easier to deal with independents, because rather than having to do big national projects, but having to sit down with the Department of Finance and wrestle the money out of there. I mean, one of my colleagues years ago said that the motto of the Department of Finance should be proudly saying no for 80 years. So that it was going to be difficult to do that for a smaller party. With independence, it is parish pump.
Once the spending commitment is made, they're unlikely to go overboard on a principle.
They're not and independents are the ones who are least likely to call an election, because they're not the ones who want to bring the house down. They want to find a way to get through it, etc.
They cause plenty of problems, though, when it comes to confidence and supply, or when it comes to the budget, or when it comes to confidence.
But never to the point that they're going to collapse it. And I think there's a situation with that. The other point about it is going back to the line from the Norway, which is a lot of our independents are gene pool independents. They're people who, I can think of a number of candidates at the moment who are Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael candidates who didn't get the run. And when they didn't get the nomination and they didn't win convention, they picked up and now suddenly discovered independence.
I just want to ask you about voter registration, Jennifer, because since January, I think around 400,000 people have since registered to vote. In the last 2 weeks leading up to the election, there was 100,000 people, which might suggest first-time voters or not. If the turnout is low, it would appear perhaps people registered and then didn't turn out. What do you think the age profile might tell us tomorrow when that information becomes clear?
Yeah, I think it's extraordinary, because when I heard those figures originally about the number of people who, it's such a huge figure, and when you parse it out per constituency, that's a lot of extra voters, and it's hard to kind of marry that, isn't that, when you hear the turnout figures, which now we don't have the final figures, and I know there was talk of a tea time rush, but It's a very weird situation, I think. I mean, I was at DCU at one stage during the campaign, and Mary Lou McDonald was there, and she was kind of mobbed by students, and the first thing they said to her was, the deadline for us to register was way too short. Lots of us aren't actually voting because the campaign was so short that they didn't have enough time. And then there was all this talk about students' Christmas and stuff like that interacting. That was last night, apparently.
I think we'll
have to wait and see. I did expect kind of a lot of extra younger voters on the basis of those figures, but I'm not so sure.
Theresa, might the increase in support, if it does transpire for the Social Democrats, be reflective of that? Might they have gravitated towards them, or as Piers Doherty was saying, Sinn Féin is happy enough to top the poll on this one. Their transfer friendliness has gone up. Does that show a generational shift?
I mean, when we dig into the figures, as a general rule, younger people are more likely to support Sinn Féin and the Social Democrats. But the other thing that we also have to say is they're also a little bit less likely to turn out to vote, sometimes for structural reasons because they're not registered to vote, but also their interest in politics is a little bit less. I think there might be something else going on, though, in relation to the voter registration figures. We have to remember COVID is like a large gap in the middle of this. And during the COVID period, it's very unlikely the people who were turning 18 were giving too much attention to registering to vote. So some of the surge could be just catching up with the fact that there are two and a half years of gaps here. And whilst we've spent an awful lot of time encouraging people to vote, I'm not sure how much attention local authorities have been giving to taking people off the electoral register. Oh, no. So we could actually have expanded the register quite a bit.
I think stage two is cleaning it up
on the other side, you know.
I think from memory, Jennifer, looking at the Irish Times, Ipsos BNI poll, BNA polling, BNI, it wasn't a ferry, it was a poll, BNA polling.
It's that time
actually, independents did quite well. They had a decent chunk of young people's votes as well. Mm. So we'll see what way that goes. There is new information in the cephalological Chinese torture. Another drip has landed on the forehead here. New data showing that Fine Gael transferred to Fianna Fáil and Fianna Fáil transferred to Fine Gael.
It's a new era.
Call me shocked, Jerry, Derek.
Yeah, it's the end of an era or whatever else there is.
So 37% of Fine Gael voters sent their second preference Fianna Fáil's way.
Well, there you go. And I think that will obviously will have such a huge bearing on how tomorrow, how the actual race pans out in terms of eliminations and in terms of the extra candidates. Does that help Fine Gael when they have all these, you know,
did
new
they
candidates?
Send it Fine Gael's way before they sent it the way of the second Fianna Fáiler in the constituency? Would be interesting to see on local levels.
Actually, yeah.
In some constituencies, I bet they did.
They probably did.
Matter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is going to be fascinating. But I wonder, does that help Fine Gael? You know, they've got 18 TDs, some veterans of politics who are stepping out of the political spotlight. A lot of faces. Now, Simon Harris, whenever this is brought up during the campaign.
And 39% of Fianna Fáil to Fine Gael.
39. Well, 39. There you go. Yeah.
It's even greater discipline.
We can all go home now. We don't need to go in tomorrow.
Yeah. It's... there still has to be a path to the 88.
Absolutely. Yeah. And intra-party transfers, even for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, they have been declining quite a bit. But even still, they're somewhere between 50 and 60%. Yeah. So if there is another Fianna Fáil or another Fine Gael candidate, you know, 60% will go to that person. But even then, on to the Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, vice versa, means that seats will be in play and that might not otherwise be the case.
There was a time in civil war politics, people used to fall out over the 77, now it's trying to form the 88. So it would appear from the numbers that are there today that you won't have a massive differential in seats to the point that the rotating Taoiseach is back in play if this transpires tomorrow.
No, that's certainly what it looks like. And I think the only argument about who goes first and who goes second. But it also looks like both parties together will be a good bit short of 88. Mm. It's almost impossible to see how they're going to be anywhere near it. Even to get to 80 is going to be a struggle. And that brings on the independent. There'll be kind of eyeing up Social Democrats and Labour together. And I just don't think that's going to be a great sell for Fine Gael. The coalitionology, let's wait till the seats are filled first and the rest of it. But I just think if we think the coalition is going to take a while to form, I think we're actually going to wait a long time for those final seats to fall.
The Greens,
Monday, Tuesday.
They could be back in play. If the raison d'etre of the Greens is, no matter what the price to the party, get back in there and, you know, almost like a kamikaze pilot. Get the mission done, even if it's at massive cost to yourself.
Yeah. But wouldn't it depend on the actual identity of who gets back in? Because it depends if ministers are falling, etc. From the Green side, I mean, don't forget, though, it wasn't that every single Green TD was wild about the idea of being in government, and many of them were out without the whip.
Some of them, that's it. Some of them.
I know that they
in and out
secretly and privately, and you know, we'll have all the spinning in the world in the next 24 hours. I think that secretly the Green Party actually might be okay with 4%. The Green message in the campaign was, if you vote Green, we will deliver. And it was one of the most effective messages, you know, on a political messaging front, but obviously 4% bears that out. But I don't think they'll be devastated with 4%.
Okay, we'll take a break. We're back in a minute.
Email latedebate@rte.ie.
Right, well, happy birthday, baby Cairns. And we didn't even get to the Limerick ballot paper and the failure to adhere to alphabetical order, because that's all we have time for this evening. The action turns to counting votes, ballots to be transported to 32 count centres across the country. And the counting of votes will take place across the weekend and will continue until all 174 positions in the next Dáil are filled. Join us here again on RT Radio 1, where Morning Ireland is on air from 8 a.m. with more details from that Ipsos BNA exit poll for RTE, the Irish Times, TG Cahir and Trinity College Dublin. I'll be back around lunchtime as part of the rolling coverage. Mary Elizabeth Bruton was our broadcast coordinator. Research was by Niamh Dunn. Liam Mullen was on sound. And tonight's programme was produced by our series producer, Penny Hart. My thanks to all the guests who joined us on the phone, and indeed to the guests who joined us here in studio. Up here next on RT Radio 1, it's Aoife Scott with Late Date.